Here we are on day three of the IBM Magic Convention, and I am in the offices over here, I guess, of the suite for the Mystery School. Jack McBride and Eugene Berger and Larry Haas and other guys, and with me is Eugene Berger. Hello, Gene.
Hi. How are you, Scott?
Doing great, thank you. It's good to have you here. And you've been associated with the Mystery School for how long? Since its inception, basically?
Oh, yeah. Jeff and I have been working together for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Time goes fast. We're having a good time.
It does. It does. And tell me how it's evolved over the years. Did it start out like as a drum thing?
It started out a lot more about history and symbology and metaphor. And then at the end of the 1990s, Jeff and I had a long conversation, and my vote was to cash it in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turned into a convention where we had 78 people, but over half of them were being comped. Mm-hmm. And every time we did this, it cost Jeff several
thousand dollars.
You're losing money. Yeah. And I said, you know, maybe we should split it off and have a class that's just about people's acts. And that became Masterclass. And then we have another conference called Magic and Meaning in mm-hmm. October, which is more about symbology and history and metaphors and storytelling. But also Magic and Meaning, to me, is also corporate magic.
Sure. Absolutely.
Heavy meaning.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, where every word means something, right. You know, to that company and their message you're trying to get across. And so those are real wonder words, as
absolutely.
Kenton would say.
And a couple of years ago, George Parker, who's one of the real top corporate entertainers in Europe, did his entire corporate show for us and talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Mystery School is. And then we have some other classes, class for mentalists, class for doctors.
That's true. After the Mindvention each year, that those people who want can stay on mm-hmm. and go to the Mystery School for
right.
mentalists.
Yes, and last year Ross Johnson taught his closing.
That's right.
Drew a lot of people.
Yes. Now, are there different teachers, or do you and Jeff teach all of those?
No, the mentalist class has Ross Johnson, mm-hmm. probably one of America's most successful corporate mentalists.
Right. Yep.
And he's been with us for maybe 4 or 5 years now. And he's a wonderful teacher who used to be a teacher and misses teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So
Chicago. They knew him for forever, probably. Yeah.
Well, even better than that, about 15 years ago, Ross said to me, "You realize you were the person that got me into magic."
Oh.
And I said, "What?" And he said, "Remember, it was a Luther League convention at
yeah.
Rock Island College, or uh-huh. Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, and you sat up all night doing card tricks with kids. I was one of those kids. And I went back to Chicago, looked up magic in the phone book, found Jay Marshall.
Yeah.
He eventually hired me in the shop."
Yeah.
And he said, "That's how it
went
all started." And I knew none of this.
Wow. What a revelation.
But it shows us that every one of us, we have no idea the people we're influencing.
The lives we touch.
And the lives mm-hmm. we touch. Exactly, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty thrilling.
It is. And you really don't know. And it's fascinating that you actually heard that story. There are so many things that we do as magicians, mentalists, or entertainers, whose lives that we touch but don't know about, particularly like,
right.
let's say, in the corporate world, where you're saying something
right.
that people will remember for year after year, you know, that when I'm doing a trade show and the next year people will bring something back, say, "Hey, last year you did such and such. Can you show this guy?" You know, and they remember that long. So that way you know that it's working. But the point is that as you're traveling around the world or wherever, that you're saying something and laying these little gems of wisdom, you know, in people's minds, and they germinate. And they may stay over in Japan or someplace and may grow up, and you may never know what positive influence that you've had on somebody.
Absolutely.
And so I think that is just an awesome task that we have as magicians, to make sure that what we are saying, what we are doing, and the influences that we are making on others is always positive. So always try and make magic as best as you can, and not embarrass somebody, you know, or be a, you know, hack or a schlock or whatever. So this way that you're showing magic in the best light, certainly, and by doing that, the lives you touch are going to be in a positive way, rather than somebody saying, "Man, I saw somebody and this was horrible. I'm never going to have another magician," or that. Well, I don't know. I'm the one doing the talking. I want to talk to you.
Well,
what are your thoughts on
that?
You
know, it's the same thing that you don't know who you're influencing. And that's both a great opportunity and a great responsibility, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And
like Spider-Man.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Like Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with great
No, you know, and
hours and great responsibility.
You know, when acts come to us at Masterclass, which is an opportunity for someone to do 10 minutes of close-up or stand-up, and then the teachers...
To do their act.
Right.
Yeah, you have to come with an act.
Well, yes. You have to come with something.
Okay.
Or you can just come to watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
The original Masterclasses came out of music conservatories where maybe only two students would perform and 300 people would learn by observing the process. So many people that come to Masterclass don't perform. They just watch the program.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe they come back and perform when they realize it's a safe place to do this.
Yeah. But you think if you come feeling intimidated, that's why they want to watch the first time?
Well, because some people just want to see what's going on before they make a commitment.
Okay.
But, you know, there's two ways of evaluating an act. This is one of the things that I try to stress. When I look at an act, one way of doing it is to say to myself, what's wrong? But that's not how I do it. My way of criticizing an act is, how can this act be better?
Those are two completely different ways of looking
at
it. Absolutely. I see exactly what you're saying. Sure.
And how can this act be better?
You can't look at everything with a negative view.
Right.
You know, you have to look at it saying, this is going to be a good act. I'm planning on having a good time. But if there is a little chink in the armor, that's what you're polishing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah, it's a great thing to be able to do this, you know. It's like working with the kids here at the IBM convention. It's really
Tell me about that experience.
Well, it's really
the last few
thrilling.
Days.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really thrilling. Particularly, you know, when we were at the World Magic Seminar with this program, you would see these kids year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things about the kids this year is their age. They were much younger. There were only a few in the late teens. Most of them were early teens.
More adolescents.
Who are going to be back and back and back.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to have a chance to see them grow.
Grow, right.
How wonderful. What a thrill.
Yeah. It's like, I'll see you next year, and I want to see what you have done with what we told you.
Right. And you know, it's just, it's so exciting. And to think that you have some small part in their success.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, to think that is your legacy.
Yeah.
You know, when we're gone, you know, as we're getting older here, Eugene, that I'm thinking about the guys I used to look at and honor, and, you know, like Tony Slidini and Diverna, of course, they're the obvious ones, but Channing Pollock and others, you know, and Fred Capps, et cetera, go on and on and on, you know, who are no longer with us but have influences in so many ways of thinking, you know, well, now who are the younger people looking up to who are living that can be their influencers, you know, and so that's why whenever I'm talking with someone or I'm having people listen to this podcast, I want to make sure they're positive things, certainly, that they can learn from and grow.
Right.
You know. So.
To learn and grow. And, you know, as I said in the lecture yesterday, to me, one of the most beautiful things about magic is that there's no end to this thing.
That's true.
I mean, I can never learn it all.
Yeah.
No
well,
matter
so
how
many
much
rooms.
I read and think and do it, it's just much more than any of us can learn.
Yeah.
And now for some people, I suppose that's a little depressing. But for me, it's always been really exciting because it means that there's always more and that there are going to be people out there that know more about some areas than I know anything about. And that's exciting to me.
Sure. You're still learning from other people.
Absolutely.
You know, that is great that I see people like you and Jeff and others who are sitting in the back of lectures. I'm thinking, what are they doing here? Are they evaluating the lecture? No, you guys are still learning.
Jeff's taking notes is what he's doing.
Is he?
He is the most unbelievable note taker I've ever met in my
life. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeff is really a self-educated person.
Mm.
You go to his library and pull a book off, it invariably it's all marked up with marginal notes and underlinings and questions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that amazes me.
Yeah, he just doesn't buy books to put in the library. He actually reads them.
He actually reads them and reads them in a critical, intelligent way.
Right.
Where he tries to figure out what's going on here.
Right.
And that's pretty fascinating. But I think Jeff and I both agree on one thing, that the teaching now is really the most important thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes Jeff talks about shows being rewarding the overprivileged for bad behavior. You know, certainly the Magic Castle sometimes is like that with the alcohol problem they sometimes have. But, no, this is important work.
And the friendships that you make, you know, last a lifetime. Like you and I have been friends for such a long time.
Yes.
The first time that we met was when we had you come to Midland, Texas, in like in 1981. It was you and Heba Haba Al and Phil Wilmarth and Roger Klaus and the Charming Cheat. What was the guy from Canada, just a second, who is the card guy? he's dead now, but I can't remember. Darn, I dipped my tongue. Anyhow, remember that was a great convention.
Yes, it was. Those guys lost their shirt.
Yeah, sure did. Yes, they did.
I think it was two pilots. As I recall.
Yep, Charlie McFarlane and David Fields. Right. Yeah, yeah.
But I think they were happy because they just brought people they wanted to have there.
Right. And,
Yeah, that was a fun time.
But I'm just saying, as far as being friends, and Jeff had said that whenever that you're going to be in a competition, you know, look around because these are the guys who are going to be your friends for life.
Right.
And when you were talking about, I'll see you guys next year, let's see what you've done, that they'll all come back and they'll still be friends and they can kind of critique each other, saying, hey, what have you, here's what I've been working on, you know.
And see, that's the whole heart of it. You just hit the heart of it, which is the hardest person for me to critique is myself.
Mm.
And so learning to critique others hopefully will help me learn how to critique myself.
Because you see yourself, a bit of yourself in some
of these. Absolutely. I see
the things
that they do.
Sure.
You know, talking over applause, talking before the people have stopped applauding, talking and moving and not just settling down. I mean, I can find myself doing that sometimes, and I remember, you know, and that's great because we're always learning.
Right.
And I think the secret of any artistic involvement is to understand that you're always a student. Whether it's painting or playing the piano or doing magic, you're always a student. There's no end to this road. Mm-hmm. We can always make a better mousetrap.
Right.
And that's our job as magicians.
And I think it's important also to bring in outside influences. The other night that they were showing a movie in which one of the youth was talking about, I eat, live, and breathe magic, you know, 24/7. And to a degree, that's okay. However, that you're limiting yourself too much. I mean, there are other things. Obviously, he still was going to school and was studying and learning that. But outside that, it would just be magic. Well, I think you should pick up other books and find out what's in the news and what's happening in sports or whatever else, you know, and have a life, you know.
Yes.
And so that's what I would encourage, you know, youth to do as well. So yes, work on this, but those other outside influences, it's just like comedians, I think, who will talk about topical things. I mean, otherwise we'd still be, you know, hearing old jokes from, you know, last century or something.
Yes.
But so you got to keep things updated by knowing what's going to be going on around you. And speaking of learning things, I obviously haven't, because I remember I was having dinner with Cesario Pelez one time, and we were, you know, out in Beverly at someone's, at one of the guys' homes, and I had been talking, and finally Cesario had said, Scott, you talk too much. He said, sometimes you need to listen. And I, you know, and I remember David.
Cesario knew how to lay it on us.
He did, exactly.
He did,
you know, David Goodsell said, you know, I got spanked by him a couple of times too. And he said, you know, welcome to the club. But he said, and I thought, well, I'm going to learn from that. You know, it's like he's right. You know, sometimes I got to bite my tongue, and there are things that I, you talk about. Speaking over your applause or your laugh line, you know, or something, that you're absolutely right. You know, there's so many things that I wish still that I could do, and I try to remember those.
I really looked at Cesario very much the way I looked at Channing. They weren't just friends, they were teachers. And
amen.
I learned so much from both of them.
Yes, right.
I mean, just so much.
Mm-hmm.
And not only just about magic, but about life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were both really deep people.
I didn't know Channing so well. I'd met him once or twice.
Yeah, see, I didn't, that surprised me about Channing. That, you know, when I finally got to know him, he said, come and visit me.
Yeah.
And I would go there every year and usually come home and write a book because I was so inspired by this guy.
Wow, okay.
And one of my biggest thrills was that he actually wrote a preface for me because, you know, he didn't like writing. He didn't like making the commitment that writing entails.
It does, yeah.
And I said, well, but I'd like him to do this forward.
So just a few paragraphs.
I said, would you do that? And he said, absolutely.
How nice.
And it flipped me out. And then,
he
went even better and said all these nice things, which made it even nicer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they were both teachers of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And Cesario particularly, because Cesario was a really deep guy, as you know.
Yeah, oh, very.
Mm-hmm. And a treasure.
Really miss him, you know, in so many ways. And he was just so personable and... You felt like, you know, that you're the only person when he's talking to you, just like you, you know, you're looking in the person's eyes. It's like, you know, kind of oblivious of whatever else, because my conversation right now is with you, you know. And he was not just looking at you, I mean, thinking of something else. He was concentrating on what you were saying and analyzing that.
You know, another person who has that gift is David Blaine.
I don't know him very well at all.
I'll tell you, you talk to David Blaine one-on-one, he gives you a quality of attention you have never had before.
I wouldn't have thought that.
In fact, in Portugal, at the FISM in Portugal, There was this big room outside the theater that maybe 500 magicians are in.
Yeah.
And I had spent time with David, so I walked into this room and I saw he was talking to an amateur magician from who knows where.
Yeah.
And so I walked around the edge of the room so I could watch David's eyes.
Oh.
He never looked over this guy's shoulder to see who else was in the room.
Right, right.
He gave this guy a quality of attention that was just... And you can understand how he got on ABC with the president of that company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. And David is a... I'm very fond of David Blaine, and I think that he's just a terrific person who understands how to talk to people.
Well, that's some great insight, because a lot of people don't know him. They see that... I guess the celebrity side of him and on television, and you know, it's not like that he comes to convention. I mean, this is the first one I've seen Lance Burton attend in I don't know how many years. Of course, he's been working.
Right, exactly.
he had another gig, you know, and kind of like David, you know. But so I don't know or see him, and I think that insight's the first I've ever heard about his personal side. I mean, I of course, I'm friends with Danny Garcia and others who work with him, and I hear, you know, bits and pieces, but again, nothing like what you just said. So
we know at Jay Marshall's, I think, 80th birthday, David came with Bill Caldwell. And Max Maven came, and he was staying at my place. And a mutual friend of all of us, Jack Gould, had a brunch and invited David and Max and Bill and me and a couple other people. And Max said, I said to Max, you're going to like this guy, because he had never spent any time with David.
Mm-hmm.
And Max, in his own way, there were some issues with David past, and Max said, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
And, you know, we came back to my place after the brunch, and he said to me, you were absolutely right. I really liked him. Because that's the quality he has.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in a way, it's a magical quality, isn't it?
It is.
It's a magical quality.
And what the definition of magical, I would think, is that it's unique, stands out, because not everybody has that quality.
Right.
So that makes it magic. If everybody had it, it wouldn't be magic.
Right.
Isn't that what magic is? I mean, if somebody floats, that's magic. But if everybody floated, it wouldn't be magic.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And so the fact that he has that quality that few people have makes it magical.
And it's a quality that, you know, it's about letting go of your own ego for a bit so you can tune into somebody else's. Isn't it?
Yes, that's
and
right.
And, of course, magic, we're all involved in that on an ego level.
Isn't that what, ego and the id.
Right. But, there are some wonderful people I've met over the years who have taught me a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Can you name two more?
Two more. Don Allen. Allen was my inspiration as a kid. My parents would take me to Shulian's when he was working there probably every other week. He spent time with me. He would teach me how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew when not to explain things. Like, for instance, once he did the haunted deck for me.
Yeah.
And I had one of those threaded haunted decks. And as I'm watching this, I'm going, thinking to myself, wow, his deck moves farther over than mine does. And then at the end, he handed it to me. And my mouth dropped open, and he said, well, I can do this with your deck, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next week I was back with my deck, and of course he did it with my deck.
Right.
And all he said was, Al Baker's Pet Secrets.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he said. He said nothing else. And, of course, the next day, Saturday, I was down at Francis Marshall's magic store buying Al Baker's Pet Secrets. And it was, of course, a revelation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great magic books of all time, I think. Al Baker is another person that really is both an inspiration and a guide. He's a guide to constructing a magic routine that moves straight ahead without wobbling from side to side with sub-stories and all that.
Mm-hmm.
His routines are great. And one example would be the silk dyeing.
Okay.
Where you have three white scarves, and the first one's put in the tube, and the second one's put in the tube, and you expect the third one, too, but of course, that's wrapped around the tube, but by that time, all the dirty work is
done. Yeah.
Because I presumed everything was going to be like the one before.
Sure. You're going right down that path.
I learned more from Al Baker.
Mm-hmm. So you'd recommend that book also?
Oh, I recommend it.
That was a huge tome, as I recall.
Well, that was the big one, but you can still get the little books. You know, I was just rereading my individual copy of Magical Ways and Means, a book that was written, I think, in 1950. And that introduction still speaks to me today.
Mm-hmm.
as really good thoughts about performing magic. This guy was amazing.
Why wasn't he more well-known, you think?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe it was a different time. Maybe his goals were different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, for instance, he had a family, and I think that, you know, that's
a big difference. And so he wasn't on the road and traveling. I mean, I think of people like Celeste Evans and others who were traveling, you know, around that time, who were more well-known in the club circuit, I guess. But Dal wasn't.
And I think he was more for, like, the local club circuit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, Chicago's a big circuit, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, he was in, what, Brooklyn when he...
Oh, LB. I'm sorry. Yes.
Jay was in Chicago.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And some people have different goals. Like, my goal was never being interviewed by people like you. My goal really was pretty low level, which was just to support myself as a local Chicago magician doing card tricks.
Right.
That was my goal.
Yeah.
And then Phil Wildmarth talked me into writing a book.
Yep.
And it changed my life.
That little, I say, pamphlet. Yeah. It's a staple-bound,
right.
One of my treasures, one of my favorite books in there,
too. It changed my life.
Yep.
And it brought me to the attention of all these people, and now I get to travel all over the world. But that was never the goal. My goal was just to support myself doing card tricks because I knew that would bring me joy.
Because you'd left school and stopped teaching theology and decided I want to do magic.
Yeah.
Interesting. And here we are today.
And here we are today. Wow.
Well, then let me ask, what about the future? Let's say, where will you be 5-10 years from now?
Well, that's a good question. Right now I'm working on a book with David Morey, a wonderful magician and also a very astute guy who wrote a book some years ago called The Underdog Advantage, mm-hmm. a book for business people. And David and I and John McLaughlin, the former head of the CIA, are writing a book together called Think Like a Magician.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope to have it finished this year and then start pitching it to commercial publishers.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah, so it'll be like through Barnes & Noble rather than for magicians. It's going to have more of a general audience.
And basically for business audience,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a lot more talks for conference, non-magic conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty exciting work. You know, part of the thing, as I said the other day, I didn't start doing stage magic till I was 60. And that was just Jeff kind of pushing me and Max Maven pushing
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
And Phil with Mark Bullmarth had been pushing me, but I didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
I'd say, you can do this. You can do stage magic. I was scared.
Yeah.
You know, and then Jeff would write me into a show, and then
a little
Max
at a time.
Wrote that show for Tina and me, Nocturnal Trio that we did for a while.
That's right.
And, you know, just through the support of my friends. And that's an important thing. That I was just at an interview for a magazine, and I've always been lucky. I've always been able to connect with other performers and work with them
mm-hmm.
in shows or whatever and learn from them and have someone there also on stage. You know, when I, you know, to do a show with Jeff McBride, when you're not on stage, when you're backstage, you just know that everything's fine on stage
because sure,
Jeff's out there.
He's handling it, yeah.
Ditto with Max and Tina,
sure.
You know. And so you learn a lot and it helps you overcome your fears. Because we all have fears.
Mm-hmm.
And as
human nature.
And as I said in the lecture yesterday, standing up in front of an audience to do a magic trick means conquering fear with courage.
That's
and we don't talk enough about courage and magic and fear because these are the things that are really making the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I have to conquer my fear. At some point in my practice, the curtain has to go up and the show has to start.
To start, right.
I can't just wait forever playing around and
in the wing.
Planning.
Yeah.
You know, planning.
I always say a magician who's not working is only fooling himself.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And his lance keeps pushing, you know. The best magicians are the ones who do the most shows.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, one other, maybe last thing here to start to kind of wrap up. A year or two ago, I believe, I had talked with you when we were at the Mindvention and recorded a podcast, and kind of in passing that you were saying that you had been lecturing on the trick that can't be explained. And what was interesting that I had more emails about that saying, I didn't know Eugene was talking about that, you know, and I was saying, yes, he's got just a lecture on just that one thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a low-key underground thing. And people, you kind of said that in passing, you know, and everybody said, what? You know, their ears perked up, you know, once they heard that you were doing that.
What's my favorite card trick?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what can be better?
I mean, if you walked up to me and said, can you do some card magic? If I had a deck of cards, that's the trick I'm going to do.
That one trick.
And part of it is that's how you become proficient at it, is by doing it.
Yeah.
And seeing everything that can happen. And now when enough things happen, then you can suddenly become on the road to mastering it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so like with comedy, I think, you know, improvisational, certainly, the more that you do it, the better you become at anything.
Right.
You know, I guess that's kind of the general nature of things. Well, Eugene, thank you very much. I appreciate
nice
your time.
It's you.
Always a wonderful time to spend with you, and I know our listeners have enjoyed this then as well.
Thank you, Scott.
So, for now, from the Mystery School room, this is Eugene Berger and Scotty out. So right now that we're at the just about to go into the banquet, but it's the cocktail reception, and I happen to catch Bill Seagraves. Hey, Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
And your wife? I'm sorry.
This is Marlene.
Sorry. Yes, good to see you guys again as well at the conventions. And so you were in England, or in Scotland, obviously, and then have been in Australia for how many years?
New Zealand. Yep.
Okay, down under. It's down close under. Enough.
Over 13 years.
13 years ago this month, we've been in New Zealand.
Yep. And what have you been doing down there? How have you been keeping yourself occupied?
Doing the magic.
Yep. And doing what exactly? Tell me some stories.
Well, we went there to semi-retire, and that just never happened.
Okay.
And we've worked everywhere. We do a lot of corporate work, and recently we've been working for Hooker Lodge. You know, Hooker Lodge is one of the most prestigious.
The Hooker Lodge? You mean it's hookers?
Hooker. No. I'll rephrase that. Hold on.
I thought I better.
H-U-K-A. It's a Maori word from New Zealand.
Okay.
But it's where the Queen, the royal family, they all stay there when they come to New Zealand.
Yes.
Presidents and, you know, film stars.
Yeah. So you're kind of the guy who's working that place.
Well, I entertain them.
Nice.
And it's quite good, actually.
Yes.
Nice work.
Is it in Auckland? Or?
It's in Taupo.
Taupo, okay.
Taupo, which is a population of 25,000, and we only have one set of traffic lights.
Okay.
Unlike anywhere else I've been in the world.
Well, my hometown, about 6,000 people, we have, I think, one traffic light. Well, we did for the longest time. Actually, we had a flashing light there for a long time until I put in a...
But that was the police.
It was funny, the police station was just right there in the corner, too. So if you ran it, they'd just run outside the station and blow the whistle at you or something, you know, over there. And so doing corporate work, are you doing big illusions? Are you doing walk around strolling? Tell me.
No, I've never done illusions.
Okay.
Many years ago, I was invited to work down in Manchester, and they used to fly me up and down, and I worked from a briefcase, and I found they were paying me more to work from the briefcase than I was to do with anything with the doves and the boxes, and that's what I've continued to do.
Yep.
We also perform for children's parties when the occasion arises,
right.
But it's mostly corporate work.
Now, I assume back when you were in Scotland that you were good mates with Pat Page?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Yes, he was one of my heroes.
Yes.
People like, not because he was a Scotsman. I also had many other heroes in magic. Billy McCombe,
yep.
Other names that people listening to this certainly wouldn't
tell
know.
Tell us, well. Please go ahead.
You know, when I was back as a young man, I met this professional magician. I was, how old was I when I met Nick? He went under the stage name of Glen Roy.
Okay. I think I've had that scotch.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a scotch whiskey, but he was a remarkable entertainer. But he didn't suffer magicians. He, you know, but I got very friendly with him, and he was just a great guy. And he did some wonderful, wonderful magic. And that's the difference between the old magicians and the new magicians.
What's that?
Well, they only had a certain amount of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
He worked from his trunk, which he traveled about with, and he had his set act in there. And he had a duplicate set in case anything went wrong with the first set.
A backup.
Yeah. Exactly the same tricks. In case he lost anything or something went wrong.
And occasionally
it could. Yeah, that's the way. And he never bought anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Never bought another magic book or another prop as long as he lived. And, you know, these are the guys that... Imagine how good they were.
Oh, sure.
Because they were doing two shows per day.
A day.
Some people I know, they buy a trick they open the thing and expect to do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, the pattern, everything is all right there with it. And so it's supposed to be, yeah, self-working trick. I always say, if it's a self-working trick, I would just set it up and then I would come back later and pick up my check.
Yeah. You know? But anyway, life's been good to us in Magic. We started in Magic, well, we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary.
Did you? Well, congratulations.
On December.
So you married her as an infant.
Yeah. She's never changed.
No, she doesn't have to fear me for being an assistant.
No, but that's the advantage, I say, with my wife. Yeah.
No, but, you know, we've been very fortunate. Marlene's been interested in Magic. Mm-hmm. I've met some magicians whose wives hate Magic.
Oh, sure.
Won't go to conventions.
Right.
But we've been very fortunate in that way.
So you don't mind then having a few posters and things on the walls or some Magic things in different rooms? And
they're all there.
All the books and whatnot?
They're all there.
Yeah.
How did you know?
We're all magicians, that's right.
Now, as I say, we've had a good life in Magic. Magic's been good to us. And as long as we can put it back to the younger people who are coming along,
yes,
I think we're doing well.
Aren't you encouraged by what you've seen here at this convention? I mean, with some of the young people?
Oh,
did you watch the stage contest?
The stage.
Yes.
You see, I couldn't palm a card when I was their age.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a palm was.
Yeah, sure.
But these are so clever. It's just amazing.
And can you imagine where they're going to be when
20
years from now?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they will only improve. Mm-hmm. And that's what's good about this convention. You know, you hear people that complain about this, complain about that, complain about the next thing. Forget all the bad things or, you know, not bad things, but that's negative things.
Yes.
Positive things. You're doing the right thing. You're encouraging Magic to continue. Magic will always continue. It will always amaze and astonish people.
Right.
But the most important thing, it will always entertain them.
It's all coming down to presentation and personality.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
And we all have our individual way of doing it.
Everybody's different.
Yeah.
So you see we saw in the competition today, the close-up, we saw cups and balls performed by quite a few different individuals.
True.
They were all different.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And each and every one of them had something that we all went, wow. I remember there was a young kid on there today who was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, where's that, as you said earlier, where's that kid going to be in a few years' time?
Right.
You know, the Michael Zamar of the future we saw here today.
I think that's very true. Yeah, these guys are going to continue to grow and to learn and develop their own ideas and things. You know, there are certain concepts or precepts, I should say, the effects that remain the same, you know, but how are you going to change those around and what new methods are you going to find, you know? So
what amazes me is the new concepts they come up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few years ago, you know, magicians were doing things with billiard balls and doves and producing cards. Now you see them doing similar things, but look how they've changed it.
Oh, sure.
You see that they're producing so many different things that we didn't have in those days.
Yes. That's true. You had to make those out of cardboard and string and spit and glue and bubblegum, it seems like, you know.
Yeah.
And now you have so many more things. Plus, yeah, the electronic gadgetry you have. And that's kind of the fine line, don't you think, Bill, that you right now, I think with this modern electronic age, that's the first thing that people leap to. So he must be using something. I don't know what it is, but there must be something, you know, like, let's say, with a two-person mind-reading routine. It's like, you know, they've got to be communicating somehow electronically. You know, and so it's hard to keep ahead of that curve.
I don't think that's a problem. You see, people watch, I'm speaking about lay people.
Yeah.
They see most magic, or they see the only magic they ever see on television.
Sure.
So when it comes to you entertain them in a corporate situation, you blow them away because they think that this is only done on television.
Right.
So that's...
When you do it live, and a lot of times people have not ever seen a magician live.
Right.
And so, I mean, there are very few of us in the whole world. Speaking of that, how many would you say there are in Auckland, or in New Zealand?
In New Zealand, pass.
Working magicians,
there's not a few.
Not many, yeah.
You know,
a lot of people have interest, I'm sure. You know,
Yes,
as far as full-time pros.
Yeah. Between South Island and North Island, there's quite a few magical clubs.
Yes.
And they're increasing, believe it or not, in this day and age. And they're encouraging youngsters to come along and perform their magic, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't... How can I put it? I've lost the word I'm looking for. It's good to see the modern magician and how they're performing. I like to see people like yourself. You've come here tonight. They're all dressed up.
Right.
I don't like magicians, pardon my expression, who come there with torn jeans and T-shirts, and that's not my scene. Yeah. I'm of the old school.
I understand. Well, when you moved, why did you move to New Zealand then to begin with? I mean, that's on the other side of the world, obviously.
Yeah. Our daughter married a Kiwi.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we end of story.
With the kids, the grandkids. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly. So we'll pick up. We're in the middle of a. Kind of a cocktail reception here, and so sorry we kind of got interrupted, but anyhow, I've forgotten exactly where we were.
Yeah, I think we were speaking about where magic's going
in the
future.
Yeah, in your future.
Well, in New Zealand, I know it's going well. Unfortunately, like anywhere else in the world, because of the economic situation, we've lost a lot of the corporate work, and that's inevitable. When companies are paying off employees,
it's going to be the first place to cut.
Of course it is.
In entertainment.
But it will pick up again. You know, things go around in circles, and it will come back. It definitely will come back. And people want to be entertained.
That's just human nature. You certainly want to. I mean, that's why we want to go to movies. That's why, we want to have, something that takes us away from our everyday troubles and whatnot. Well, let me ask you, we start to close, because I know we got the dinner and everything over here then shortly. The name of the podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then, Bill, what is your magic word?
Oh.
It could be like, what do you live by? What's your slogan, your mantra? What do you live by? What's important to you?
Oh.
Not necessarily like abracadabra.
No,
magic phrase? Or?
I don't really... Well, my one is... I hope you're picking this up.
Yep.
Supercaledonian mystic, expert at hypnosis. Now, that may not...
Caledonian.
Is a Scottish.
Scottish. Yes.
Supercaledonian mystic, expert at hypnosis.
There you go.
I like making up little...
That's so high. You know, I call myself a paradoxologist.
That's a word. I didn't know that.
Yeah, one who studies, you know that.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll show you that. I did. Okay. I showed you that.
Yes, I think so. Okay, well, that'll be, I think, it's a wrap over there, because it's getting going about 5:30. Thank you guys very much.
Well, thank you. That was great.
I have to listen to this on the podcast. We'll see you all later. Thanks a lot. For now, that's Bill Seagraves. Scotty out.